Because the biggest distinction, right, is remaining human and remaining authentic. So even with all of the LLMs kind of just ingesting everything that we're doing online, I think you being you out there more, you being your authentic self online more, is going to be more of a skill now, because your prompt is going to be, or prompts will learn to kind of replicate you, so to speak. So your own human spin on all the noise that's out there is going to be an essential skill.
Hey, fellow marketers, welcome to another episode of the Marketing Careers Podcast presented by themarketinghelp.co. All right, so that opening you heard, that is this episode's guest, Ben Hain. And Ben is a marketing leader, specifically in the tech space, and he's worked at various platforms and SaaS companies, including Uberflip. Now he's the VP of marketing at a leading AI-enabled visual effects startup called MARZ. It's an acronym, M-A-R-Z. Now, Ben has some great tips and stories on how he has and how he is using AI as part of the three key phases of any marketing campaign, and that's using AI on impacting strategy, creative, and execution. So we also dig into the ethical considerations of AI, and Ben shares his vision for the future where AI becomes a powerful tool beyond just the marketing efficiencies, but also a tool that can contribute to some positive societal change. So some great thoughts and insights there from Ben. Now, he's probably one of our guests that has shared the strongest list of tools to test or check out. And I looked at a couple of them. They're really cool. So get ready to start testing some AI tools you probably have not heard of and probably could help save you some time and effort in your marketing campaigns. So let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Ben Hain. Ben, welcome to the episode.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric. Great to be here. Great to talk about this hot topic that I think we've all been hearing about daily for the last 6-9 months. And it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
No, only evolving. And I know that it's touching your career, or it's touching what you're doing now in a way. But how about we just set some context for the audience and just let everyone know how you got into marketing, how you found that path that led you to some of your marketing roles, and then speak about how you got into your current role and how that's touching Gen AI today.
Yeah, in general, I'm going to repeat a word a lot, and the word is curiosity.
Nice.
You're going to hear that a lot from me today, just around Gen AI and around the spirit of what's going on now with Gen AI. I originally got into tech as a developer. I was an old database engineer back in the old Oracle days. For any of my Oracle 8i dinosaurs out there, I remember those days, so maybe you do too, or I'm just showing my age. From there, I got into marketing, building websites, working with different teams. I knew I wanted to get into some different agencies, so I did that, got back to school, and ended up working with agencies, and then caught the startup bug about 15 years ago, and I've been doing that since. So my background is really in digital transformation, demand generation, and all things marketing. There's a little bit of product marketing and stuff built in. And then that curiosity for me, going from development to running marketing and learning strategy and developing and guiding teams, that's what has led me to get into generative AI. Right now, I feel like the energy is the same as it was about 15 years ago at the dawn of what we called Web 2.0 back then, when the internet went from read-only to read-write. I feel that same energy now with Gen AI on the table. And it is that level of curiosity that you really need to kind of propel yourself into success. I call it, you know, a first mover opportunity right now. If you're one of the first ones being curious about Gen AI, leverage that curiosity and learn before anyone else can.
And I love that term. I love the use of that term. And I love that you'll be referring to that term more and more, because we definitely hear that as a almost a requirement now, as it relates to staying in tune with what's happening in this space, is being curious for sure. And again, the tips and everything you want to share today is going to be extremely helpful for our audience, who, again, our goal here is help our audience be prepared to navigate whatever flavor of the Gen AI experience that they're going to be tackling in their careers. So let's start here. I mean, when it comes to, you know, your perspective and describing what generative AI is, how would you describe generative AI?
Just on its surface, there's I would say two different big ways that we can use AI that are predominant now, generative versus predictive, right? I have worked on predictive startups before, and I love predictive. And that's essentially, you know, leveraging a large data set to predict what's going to happen. So that has been quite sophisticated for some time. But now generating the actual content that a large language model is researching, that large data set, and building out the actual content leading to that, that's the era that we're in now. For me, all that really means is, at this time, based on the tools that I'm using, it's building a straw man. And what that means is it's a first draft that can easily be torn down. However, the old way of doing things, you'd sit in a pitch meeting or you'd sit in a campaign chat or anything. Someone comes up with an idea and then it gets torn down or whatever. And there's like an ego tied to that idea, right? Or maybe there's some groupthink associated with it. A CEO walks in and says, we're doing this, and throws it on a whiteboard. And everyone's like, I don't care if it's good or bad, we're doing it, right? But if you can leverage Gen AI now, if you create that straw man, it does not have ego. The machine does not care about its idea. It's just saying, based on this data set that I've observed, this is, I think, five things that you can do. And that's a really good starting point. It really takes away that what I call big white blank screen fear that most kind of first draft or initial ideas suffer from, and gives you that advantage. So to me, Gen AI is just the first step, the straw man to kind of get things going.
I love it. I love that description, because you're right. It doesn't have that ego. And I've actually, in some of my prompts, been applauding or giving positive reinforcement just to see how it would react, if at all. But you're right. It's just about, you know, taking that first draft and going and iterating off of it. So when you think about the disruption is how we're classifying what, you know, the space that Gen AI is in right now.
Right.
But when it comes to either personal use or working with teams, what have been some of those disruptive moments that you've seen? You know, call them disruptive moments, aha moments. What were those moments when somebody said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to figure this out, or we've got to jump on this, we've got to reinvest, we've got to divest? What have been some of those moments that you've seen either personally or with the team?
Well, it's the doing more with less mentality that everyone is dealing with right now in tech, right? You've either gone through some form of a riff or a cut to your tech stack or a combination thereof. So you are literally having to increase your operational efficiency. And what that means is you just need to get more efficient in terms of your go-to-market process. At the same time, you still need to produce either results or produce effort that can show, hey, I'm doing all I can to achieve the same results. And what that really means is streamlining process. There's two areas that we've really disrupted internally with my team. We did end up having to reduce some staff, really on the kind of creative side. So our creative process is something that had to have been disrupted. We were already migrating toward more of a self-service model with a lot of our ad creative and, you know, digital creative, everything from ebooks to ads to white papers, whatever you name it, all of that design stuff. We used to have a team, and it went down to, you know, a very small agency or one designer or one resource kind of just creating templates and leveraging tools like Canva, right, to kind of do a self-service. Now, even built into Canva, there's AI-generated templates that we can leverage there to kind of ABX test. So now that process has been, again, the first draft has been knocked out faster, the templates are faster, everything's moving faster. We're not saying that it's going to be perfect, but we know it's going to be within brand guidelines, and we know we'll be able to experiment better. On the content side, went through the same thing. We actually went without a content manager for some time and had to leverage, you know, a combination of external resources, or just had to leverage Gen AI tools like Writer and Grammarly to get us to that first draft. We used to have, we still do have a rule that every program manager has to write their own first drafts for anything, email, landing page, whatever program thing you're launching, right? You need to own that copy. You know your program better. You put the campaign together. But getting that first draft out of someone that's busy running a program has always been tough. It's always been an issue. And the poor copy editors out there, if anyone's listening that is content marketing, you've probably felt this pain. You end up getting this terrible first draft that you have to revise for voice and tone and align to brand guidelines and make it readable and make it fun and distinctive. Now that first draft is actually amazing because it's already been beaten up through several iterations using those tools that I mentioned. And now that editor just has to do like a quick review, a quick peer review, and things are getting approved faster. That also does mean, though, we need to experiment more and kind of fail faster and increase our measurement after things get out.
And that's, so I love the example you're giving there, because there's got to be a marketing manager out there now who might be about to get into the same experience that you just laid out there. So they know that there's a solve there that can leverage Gen AI to go through the reduction in force, or go through the going in-house instead of externally, because we want to just use someone on the team to get this become more efficient. You know, how do you ensure the continual education of your team, you know, when it comes to what tools they should be testing, or hey, have you tried this? I mean, is there like a task force set up, or is it everyone independently is kind of educating themselves?
Well, I'll get into, maybe later on, I'll get into actually what I am doing testing intended tools. And I might be hyper curious in terms of testing, but just internally with my team, what I did was kind of divide everything up into like this three main functional areas. There's creative, execution, and strategy, right? And with just the advent of all the tools out there and being a curious person and knowing how this stuff is built, I really wanted to test what can I do to kind of speed things up, knowing that we did go through a RIF, knowing that, you know, I'm going to be asked to hit the same pipe and rev goals. How can these three functional areas of marketing kind of improve? On the creative side, those examples I gave you were exactly what we did. One of the big things that we ended up going through with fewer people was having to redo our messaging recently. So that's no easy task. For anyone that's been through that, you go through this massive messaging exercise, you pull all the top brains in the room, and then you have, you know, these new value props and ICP stuff and personas and things you're going to go to market with. And then that gets jumped onto a marketing team and they're like, go, now just rewrite the entire website and all the ads and everything that's out there, right? With a smaller team, we had to leverage AI tools to do that. But what was cool about that was we were able to start and say, okay, let's look at the most eyeballs that are going to see the new messaging. That's mainly everyone being exposed to our digital ads. So we took all of the new messaging, ran it through Writer, which is the AI tool that we use, distilled it down into, you know, 6 or 8 different dynamic ads, let that run in market on Google using DSA, dynamic search ads, let it kind of permutate the best ads. And then we took that messaging, put it into the more static elements, display ads, web pages, landing pages, all that stuff. It's already been kind of audience approved. That stuff led to conversions. And we made AI kind of tell us with the audience exposure what was going to work. So that's how the messaging stuff got rolled out in record time there. On the execution side, same thing here. We do a lot of ABM, so it's hard to get into an ABM mindset when maybe you're selling to an account that you don't have anything in common with. My team, we're basically marketing to marketers, so it's not tough, but I have been on the other side where I'm marketing to, you know, a cybersecurity expert or someone in, you know, analytics or something else that I just don't do. But now what you can do is actually write a prompt and have it say, hey, you're a paranoid cybersecurity expert from Boston with 15 years of experience. What 3 things do you actually read every week? And it might give you some more insight. And then from there, you can execute some deeper ABM campaigns. On the strategy side, it is a little like more nebulous. I've experimented with some tools like AI Suggests and Yarnit that kind of spit out niche marketing ideas. Those right now aren't super evolved. They're going to give you some good baseline strategy, stuff that was like cool 5 years ago. But again, what that does give you is the straw man. So they'll tell you, you know, here's some good marketing strategies to do. Here's a webinar. Here's a field event. Here's this or that. You've probably run it a million times. But what you can actually do is take that, put it in front of your team and say, okay, here's where we're starting. How can we make this better? How can we make it more distinctive? How can we inject some humanity into this and then turn this decent idea into a great idea? So that's how I think of implementing those tools. If we go back later and talk about, you know, all the other tools I'm using, I'm happy to answer that question.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's a good, I like that use case and how you structured and broke down where you have your focus elements for your team. So the next question would be, when you think about that and, you know, fast forward a couple of months after leveraging the tools in the way that you're saying, What risks do you think about, or maybe you've seen some already, when you become too reliant on the tools for the first draft or the straw man? You know, how do you see that impacting anything, you know, from a risk standpoint?
Yeah, that it gets super risky if you're, you know, exposing, first of all, PII data or anything behind your company firewall to it. Some people or some organizations have, of course, adopted their own LLMs behind their own firewall. That's safe. But if you have not adopted or created some form of Gen AI policy internally with your compliance team, if you don't know if one exists, don't mess around. Don't start injecting stuff in there. Don't let it read your emails. That's first of all. I don't want to give anyone prescriptive information if they're going to break an internal rule. But the big risks are really with the kind of copying and pasting and not treating anything as a straw man. I think we've all seen it out there. I've certainly received a few emails where you can see it's like generated by ChatGPT at the bottom because someone forgot to do a little review. This stuff is not copy and paste. It still needs a peer review. Notice I've not said that we planned to not hire a content marketing manager or not hire a designer. Those people still need to be employed. They still need to review this stuff and make sure it adheres to brand and tone guidelines and review everything. Same QA process that you have when you launch any campaign, that still needs to happen. This is just kind of giving you that first draft first.
Yeah, I think those are some good points because, you know, it makes me, and I had this conversation with another guest, it reminded me of the time when social media first came out. And you know, think about the Wild Wild West, you know, where there was this element of, hey, should we be doing this? And, you know, some CMOs were saying, yeah, let's go for it. Some were saying, hey, let's just wait and see what happens. And meanwhile, you remember those conversations where it was about having a terms and conditions and policies around social media content. Well, it's almost here we go again, where this might be a little bit more powerful in terms of what it can do. But I think that's a great point. And, you know, in the risk being not taking it as a serious, you know, process and protocol thing where there needs to be some guidelines geared up, especially if you're an organization that cares about PII.
When I think about PII and Gen AI policy, Wired actually came up with a great template that we were looking at that we leveraged internally once we started adopting those tools. So, you know, for the listeners out there, start there. Yeah. And you can even copy and paste that and kind of work with your internal compliance teams to build your own. But I think we're going to see a lot more of those popping up internally just throughout organizations, smaller organizations now, not the large ones that already have their own private LLMs.
Now, so you were talking about Writer as kind of like your go-to tool. You know, we've heard about Writer, we've heard about Jasper, we've heard about ChatGPT just in conversations around this series. You know, what are some of those other tools? I mean, you mentioned some of those other ones for strategy. You know, what are the go-to tools that you're using besides, you know, the ones that might be more common?
So this is where there's probably the tools that I'm testing independently, yep, and the tools that I'm probably approved to to use due to budget constraints, right? And everyone, I think, right now is going through some form of budget consciousness. Either you're trying to trim or replace or combine in some sense. So internally, we've kept it really simple to kind of the writing tools because those have, you know, a relatively low cost per user per month basis. And I'm talking about, you know, Writer and Grammarly and those things, even ChatGPT Pro, and even, you know, the freer tools like Bard, Gemini, and DALL-E. I use all that stuff all the time. But some of the other tools that I also end up testing, I'm usually testing things like spiky.ai. I get invited to beta access to. So those things kind of automate call recording and coaching. I'm testing a tool called Polywork, which is kind of a personal blogging tool. Testing another one called Osum, which automates product market research. And I'm testing a tool called SuperRep, which automates the entire BDR function. And there's a few of those out there. So these are ones that I just get invited to because I'm always testing a few tools a week. Yep. But in terms of what I'm approving budget on, a lot less risky just because we're trying to keep it low and slow for now.
I think in your position, that's part of your responsibility is to keep the finger on the pulse of these other tools, you know, test them out, get invite to the beta, just to make sure that, you know, hey, there could be something here worth investing in because, you know, you've tested it and it's going to help us save even more time. So I'll have links to in the show notes for all these tools that you're mentioning, which are great. Now you mentioned the word budget there. And yep. when you think about budgeting for AI, everyone, we all know the tools, some tools will cost this and that per month, you know, fairly reasonable in terms of 20, 40, 100 bucks a month. Mm-hmm. If to the marketing team, marketing manager out there who's thinking about how to build, if they still need to build a business case or they're putting budgeting in for the upcoming year, what other items should be factored into an AI budget?
So when I think about that, I really think about what is proven that you can probably replace or displace at this time. So what I mean by that is you probably have a platform in use or multiple platforms. We're using like 10% of it, right? So think about that 10% of the platform and just be curious and get out there and figure out what AI tools are just focusing on that 10% of, you know, the full platform that you're using. Legacy MarTech people are going to really hate this part of the call, but this is really what it is, because what I'm seeing out there with the AI landscape is that there's a ton of AI developers that are just focusing on just like the little pieces of a lot of these legacy platforms. And I don't want to name names on this part because I don't want to, sure. you know, yeah. get blacklisted here. But let's think about like Web 2.0 and Craigslist, right? What we saw happen was Craigslist was this huge site where you could just find anything you wanted, you know, 10 years ago, if everyone remembers that. And then all these niche sites kind of started popping up. Little marketplaces here, little dating sites here for kind of their dating section. You know, all these apps started popping up. And then over time, everyone kind of left Craigslist, but then these micro ecosystems developed on the app side, right? That's the same thing that's happening with AI now, where these large legacy platforms are like, okay, we do all these things for all your teams. And most teams are like, yeah, but we just like this one little piece. I guarantee you that one little piece is right now an AI tool. So you can get on sites like there's an AI for that and spit out a list of like 5 or 6 tools, sign up for the free trials, see if it's legit, and test those out and get those going. And you can displace quite a bit of budget doing those sorts of things.
I mean, I love that perspective, because you're saying, hey, you know, when budgeting for AI, it could be about not just saving money, but saving money that could be reinvested into other things like headcount. Yes. You know, have you seen it in your case, you know, whether in your team or other teams, when it comes to that budget, it's an opportunity to invest in, let's say, development, professional development, or is it, you know, if you're working in a B2B SaaS space, it's buying hours or investing hours for the engineering team to incorporate something else into the product. Any of those items you see factor into a budget for AI?
Yeah, I have personally invested in this. I should have mentioned this up front, but I did take like an AI MOOC a few years ago when things were starting to bubble up. Again, curiosity is key here. So jump on Coursera or Udemy and, you know, figure out how this stuff works, or refresh your own staff and yourself, and get on there and figure out how these things work. That's the first thing that I would recommend doing. And it'll give you a little bit more confidence, right, in leveraging these tools and maybe make it less scary. On the dev side, I think that comes down to policy. There are still a ton of devs out there that either don't want to leverage it, or as you saw recently in the news, I think sections of, you know, one AI IP were lifted from like ChatGPT recently. And so then like that dilemma seems to come up. So with devs, I think it's a little more sensitive. However, if I were still developing, I would certainly be leveraging some of these AI kind of code review and QA platforms, because QA is the worst part of dev and no one likes to do it. And if you can have a machine do at least a first pass there, that's going to save you a ton of time and deployment. That would be the only thing I'd say about dev. But everything else, the other factor here is the ethical portions of AI as well. I think we're going to see a lot of creators either start to pull their stuff down from different platforms, or platforms have to react to, you know, creators that don't want to have their stuff exposed. So try to leverage platforms that are creator sensitive or creator centric. That way, anything that you're using internally isn't caught up in any ethical issues or, you know, litigious issues if things get pulled down or changed.
No, good points. Good points there. You know, the education piece, I think, is key, because, you know, like any other new technology or movement, there's going to be thousands and thousands of courses and options out there where, you know, you may say that there's, you know, places like Coursera and these other places where there's going to be some decent education you can invest in. But your point on the coding or the policies being factored in too, super important, right? Because there could be that development team that's like, you know, no thanks, or the development team's like, hey, yeah, let's try to spin up a couple projects here to incorporate this into our product. All good stuff. So some good kind of foundational pieces here we're discussing. So we're gonna take a quick break, come back, and let's talk about the future and the fun stuff. You alluded to a couple of it, but we'll get into it a little bit deeper, and we'll be right back after this quick break. Hey there, Eric here, and I trust that you're enjoying this season of the Marketing Careers Podcast. Do you have a favorite episode yet? Do you have a favorite actionable tip? Well, that's okay. We got a ton more episodes coming, so hope you enjoy the rest of those as well. Just want to remind you, we have this resource we've curated for you at themarketinghelp.co/GenAI, and there you're going to find a couple of things. A comprehensive list of AI marketing tools, including some tools you probably have not heard of yet or have not tested yet. So you got to check that out. We have a complete AI transformation checklist, adopting some of the things you've heard so far, but also it gives clear direction on things you need to make sure you do at the right time. And can certainly help with any team or marketing leader navigate this disruption a lot smoother. We also have an excerpt from our recent book we published. The book is called CMO Disruption Playbook Generative AI, but we've extracted even more value for you with a free download of an excerpt from that book. So all the things you need to help with this this disruption of generative AI, head on over to themarketinghelp.co/GenAI, grab that free information, and enjoy the rest of this season. And let's get back to the episode. Think back to that time when you first realized, you know, some form of AI was possible. And maybe that was, you know, in your coding days or what have you. But think about that moment all the way until right now. And, you know, this is the coulda, shoulda, woulda moment. Is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think about this all the time. You know, I mentioned like that online course that I took a couple of years ago. And I do live in the Bay Area. I get the benefit of being near like the Berkeley Lab, and I've done and gone to some events there and done some roundtables and stuff. And, you know, being a seasoned marketing veteran, there was an inflection moment where I was like, if I want to just do a hard pivot and go back into development and just focus on AI, that wouldn't be a bad move. Like I knew that that was going to be a huge paradigm shift in a few years. I obviously did not. I'm still chugging along here as a marketer, just because I love it so much. But that's probably the only big difference I would have done. So if you're new in dev or thinking about going into dev, get in, learn all the LLMs and coding models that you can, because I do not see this going away. There are endless applications that AI are going to have across multiple industries. I don't think you can go wrong. I think it's just going to be implemented in just pretty much everywhere in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because, you know, I've got a nephew who entered college 3.5 years ago wanting to be an engineer. And I remember having a conversation with him about, you know, what his options were, what he thinks his options were going to be at the end of graduation. Sure, you take an internship, all those things. You know, recent conversation with him, this is what we're talking about. He's talking about how he can leverage and get a be part of some sort of AI component in an engineering field. And it really has his eyes open, where 3 years ago, we weren't talking about that. So, you know, at that level and that generation, it's almost like you're talking to yourself years ago saying, hey, you follow this. This is going to lead to something. You may want to check this out. Going back to your curiosity point.
It's one of those time machine moments, right? Like where everyone says, oh boy, if I went back to 96, I'd just buy Apple. Stuff, right? If I had more time, I might just go back and do a full pivot. Those developers right now that are sitting in school learning this stuff, they're going to be the ones developing the next Apple or something like that. That's going to make a big wave of change for us.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, let's zero in on, you know, this is another question when thinking about the future of the impact of and the disruption of generative AI, but focusing on marketing teams. And you mentioned earlier just about how you structure your team in terms of how they focus on their work. But let's fast forward 12 months. You know, how do you see this impacting the structure of teams? You know, if you're a CMO 12 months from now, how are you building your team? Is it any different? What sort of impacts do you see Gen AI having on the marketing teams?
I think marketing and anyone that is probably customer focused and even all the way through to dev, again, depending on policy, we have prompt understanding as kind of a requirement. When we were hiring for a content manager role, we did slip that in. We were like, well, we're not going to not hire someone if they don't use ChatGPT or don't know how to use it, but it's going to help. And I ended up adding that line. So we had kind of AI curious people in there. That was months ago. Now, I probably wouldn't hire anyone that doesn't at least use something on a daily basis, because I just know that it's going to speed up that go-to-market process, and they're going to have more of an understanding and sense of experimentation, right, with all of those outputs.
Yeah, and B, you know, we always talk about what when it comes to hiring marketers, looking for the solution-oriented individuals. And I think you're right in terms of requirements for candidates. There absolutely has to be some sort of proof or conversation, authentic conversation about how they're using it on a daily basis. Not just for marketing stuff, but you know, if someone's using it on personal level, hobby level, I have to imagine that's going to be, you know, a standard requirement for any marketing team, you know, not just for their role, but also for the integration with other departments. Now, you know, think about that team 12 months from now. Do you see any new roles developing that don't exist today that, again, if you're, we have an undergrad, you know, marketing major who's thinking about their career 5 years from now or 3 years from now, is there a role that's going to exist that we're not talking about?
Yeah, I'm already seeing this role develop. As soon as GPT Pro came out, where you can run up an LLM for anything, this role probably exists. I'm not sure what the title would be. Maybe a GPT org creator, someone that just optimizes your own instance and gets either a full business unit or department or full organization, has everything there, has prompts, canned prompts designed to quickly answer any questions throughout the organization. So this goes like one layer deeper than Slack. So instead of me Slacking Eric about, you know, yesterday's meeting notes, I just go to the GPT and say what happened yesterday in the demand gen thing, and it just spits out, you know, a dashboard. Now that prompt needs to be refined, configured, and done just right. That is a person that is, you know, in college right now or curious right now, yeah, that knows how to do that, that can deploy that across organizations. I think that's one big thing. The second could just be that same person or a variant of that person doing the training. So training everyone on how to do prompts, or instead of a hackathon, more of like a promptathon, right? Where you get your team deployed on at least a small handful of tools, get them learning how to do it, and then just mandating the output that's, hey, we're going to be 25% more efficient by next year. We're all going to go in on this. But we need that kind of prompt coach or whatever to go in and kind of lead us, right, to that goal. Maybe it's prompt enablement. I don't know the name of that, but
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I think those two ideas right now, if someone's listening and they're saying, you know, they could be saying to themselves, oh, I'm going to start that, or I'm going to raise my hand and say, hey, we need this. Can I be this role? And how many times in your marketing career have you been told, you know, if you don't see the role that you want, just create it yourself, do it, and, you know, kind of build value around it. I think you've made two great business case or use cases for these developing roles that, you're right, some people may be doing it right now, but there's organizations probably, you know, planning strategically for the future that may want to think about filling those roles. You know, in that development, and I love the idea of the promptathon, or the idea of, you know, if you're a marketer right now and you're all in, you're curious, are there skills, whether they're human skills or hard skills, that you think marketers should be investing in now so that they're staying with the pace of Gen AI?
Yeah, great question. I think it's a little bit of both, because the biggest distinction, right, is remaining human and remaining authentic. So even with all of the LLMs kind of just ingesting everything that we're doing online, I think you being you out there more, you being your authentic self online more, is going to be more of a skill now, because your prompt is going to be, or prompts will learn to kind of replicate you, so to speak. So your own human spin on all the noise that's out there is going to be an essential skill. And what that means is kind of what I was saying before about the straw man, right? It's going to spit out maybe five ideas or five ad variants. If you don't have the skill to take that prompt and then say, okay, who's my audience? Who's my persona? You know, how does this fit with, you know, my target audience or my buyer, and kind of make those tweaks to make sure a human is speaking to them over the prompt, we're all going to be able to detect that. In marketing, we already can. We know when we get a fake email, we roast it, we forward it around. We've all done it. It happens. But when it's well done, we also forward it around on the universe. And we're like, whoa, they really did their job here. You could tell a human did this and maybe AI helped them, but this was a cool idea.
Yep. Yep. That's good insight. Yes. Guilty of sending around those those emails, both on the good side and the not so good side. And you know, to your earlier point about those courses that are of interest, you know, you're right. I think everybody should be starting at a base level, just understanding machine learning or the, if there is a Gen AI baseline 101, course, ingest it, educate yourself, learn something. But the authenticity is key here too. You know, it's almost like telling somebody, keep being yourself. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means a lot when it's tied to you having to edit, review, and, you know, put the necessary keys into a piece of content. So, you know, good points there. The other thing that is a big topic when it comes to the marketing teams with generative AI is, I mean, we're marketers, right? So we're focused on data analytics and measurement. So do you see, or have you seen any new marketing metrics that are being looked at for a measurement of success, or is it just hyper focused on the standard issue marketing metrics, but there's an efficiency quotient that we're looking at?
Yep. Right now I'm only seeing efficiency increases. I haven't really heard of or seen anyone trying to measure. I'm not sure what they could measure, maybe richness of languages used. I know like Grammarly does a really good kind of weekly recap where it tells you, you know, how you compare to the variants of words that you're using. And I know using that has kind of increased my language variance, but I don't think that's really a measurable outcome. I'm not going to walk into a boardroom and say, hey guys, I use more words than everyone else or something like that. But what I can walk into a boardroom is, hey, look, we were able to A/B test every single campaign now. Before, we only had time to do 2 of 10 that we'd launch a quarter, right? And that A/B testing has led us to, you know, increase conversions, increase pipeline, increase revenue. So that's really the line of thinking that I'm on right now. Maybe, however, in the future, there will be, if there is kind of a prompt coach or someone out there, maybe that's a measurable outcome. Hey, how many prompts did you develop or tweak or refine? How many minutes did you save querying data due to those prompts? That could be something in the future.
And you wonder, and I'm just thinking of this now, coming top of mind that you're saying this, is yeah, I remember the days when social media became a thing, and talk about the tool landscape, when all these monitoring, listening tools were kind of popping up every week, and then sentiment became a thing, and measuring sentiment was a thing. Now, I'm wondering, you know, can generative AI play a role in more accurate sentiment measurements? Because back then, it was word-based, I think, you know, maybe a little bit of intent, but I have to imagine that, you know, some of these generative AI tools could give a little bit better understanding of sentiment. You know, so that use case would be for those companies that, you know, have a deep connection to having to look at that information. But I don't know, maybe sentiment could be one of those metrics that becomes key to some of these tools.
For sure. I think for like PR and reputation management, there's an opportunity there, right? Overall brand sentiment. I know some tools that kind of monitor that, and then internally as well, like some of the tools I mentioned, like Spikey, and I've experimented with Lavender as well. They're really good at, within a call or within an email thread, gauging sentiment, gauging your engagement and your passion for the subject at hand. And then that kind of gives you reports over time. You can get down to the rep level, right? If you have 10 people emailing and calling, you can say, hey, everyone's engaged with whatever you're doing and the three of you aren't, you need to learn from, you know, the other seven.
Right.
So that is something I think that could be measurable.
Good stuff. So, you know, the one thing I think our audience is interested in, and we've heard this, you know, feedback from other episodes we've done, but, you know, just wanting to know where do the experts go to get their information? So when it comes to resources, our audience should be checking out, you know, obviously there's thousands, but Do you have kind of go-to YouTube channels, newsletters, blogs that our audience should check out for staying on top of AI?
Rev AI is a good newsletter. There's a human AI. I think she publishes weekly. She does kind of a deep dive podcast, kind of like this one, but hers is more on the creative side.
Yep.
Where she's talking to creators, you probably know of it. And then there's an AI for that is also great. I think they have a, if not daily, a weekly newsletter, but it's just a cool resource where you can categorically look for stuff and test a ton of tools. All of those will give you like a handful of tools to test either daily or weekly. If you are weird like me and click on all of them and start playing with them, you know, let me know your thoughts. If not, just follow me on LinkedIn and I'll tell you which ones I'm using and which ones I like.
I like it. So, the ones you referenced there, I'll include links to those in the show notes. Cause you know, I'm loving the diversity of answers we get from our guests when it comes to where they go to get their information. So I think our audience is going to have a good pool of options to choose from. There's an AI for that, probably one of the best names of a platform or a location, if this, then that,
exactly.
It's all in the name.
In that guy. Yeah. I love that tool.
So last question here, you know, again, your perspective, your experience, you know, I think there's a lot that you've shared with us today. And I'd like to ask this last question, kind of the open mic, you know, tackling the big question of, you know, where do you see this AI thing going? And it may not just have to be in the marketer's context, but, you know, I spent some time looking around. I'm sure our audience has too. You look at all the things that are starting to halo effect, or the catalyst that generative AI is having across other spaces. What are your thoughts just in terms of where this is going to go?
I love this question because it's outside of marketing. We talked about a lot of cool stuff around operational efficiency and how, you know, my teams and other teams can use this. But this to me is not even as important as what I'm reading out there. I have a prompt that I just refresh every week that just shows me the latest AI research, you know, studies and papers, things that are published in journals like Nature and different science journals. And, you know, recently, if you're curious like me, you've probably heard or read that over 2 billion new materials have been discovered leveraging predictive AI models and generative AI models, right? So now scientists are actually discovering new materials that they can go through and test, and it's pushing their research forward, you know, tens of hundreds of years, more than any human could have done in a lab. Now they can kind of plausibly test through these materials and potentially speed up our reduction on fossil fuels, right? So this is really kind of game changing. This can really change the way that the energy is stored, saved, and scaled. On the other side, journals like Nature are showing that Alzheimer's research, organ research, blood tests, all of these things are being just enormously sped up, leveraging AI as well. So now we're saving and extending lives. The marketing stuff that I'm doing pales in comparison to this. This is saving the earth. I'm, you know, making web copy better. I am so curious and fascinated by that. And if there's any prediction I can make, it is that AI is going to be our future one way or the other. And we should rally around it. Obviously, there should be some safeguards in place. But if we use it the right way, it can really have a lot of benefits to society.
And I love that perspective, because I think there's a lot of people listening that sure, we're in tune with what's happening in the world, but maybe didn't realize that you know, AI has been helping efficiencies in other areas that, like you're saying, the reduction, the improvements, it's touching all those areas that, you know, one day we're going to wake up and see a news clipping about how, you know, there's tangible savings of lives that we never thought was even possible. So I'm curious that the prompt you're saying, you have a prompt that you put into like ChatGPT to pull out.
This is actually a Bar Gemini prompt. I use Bar Gemini more for extensive web search because it has more exposure since it's Google based.
Yep.
I just have a prompt that says, "Hey, just give me the top five studies on AI that are happening this week across all industries." And nice. A lot of the time, these scientific journals. And if you're curious and want to see how this stuff works, you know, maybe I'll send you that prompt. You guys can run it yourself. But it just, you know, gives you papers to read if you're a nerd like me that does reading like this. But it's really fascinating. It'll also kind of instill a little more faith in humanity to know that, hey, this stuff is moving forward. And, you know, we have some longevity and other people that are thinking this way out there.
I mean, I love that idea. I'd definitely be interested in that prompt. But again, the point you're making there is, you know, you're using Bard because of it's tapping into what is, you know, kind of the here and now, not what's from a closed database. So I think that's important. But I also like the idea that, you know, just gathering this research that we're probably not going to see in the nightly news, or we're not going to see in headlines on CNN. So that's an interesting action as well. Good stuff. So Ben, you know, as we wrap up here, and you know, I think you've given our audience a lot of good things to digest and think about, and I'm sure there's going to be some questions that someone may want to follow up with you on. So what's the best way for our audience to connect with you?
So I'm going to start blogging a little bit more about these tools that I'm using on my LinkedIn. It's at MojoMogul, MojoMogul. Follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me there. You'll see me in some AI groups as well. Send me questions, connect with me, send me messages. I usually check them every week. I'm happy to follow up with anyone.
Nice. I'll definitely share that link and information in the show notes. So Ben, thank you so much. Great stuff, great insights. I appreciate your perspective here. This is definitely fresh perspective, fresh perspectives that you're sharing that we haven't heard yet. So I'm glad our audience had a chance to hear from you. So thank you for your time today. Best of luck with everything and beyond.
Eric, thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
All right. Big thanks to Ben Hain for joining us on this episode. Listen, the biggest takeaway I got from this conversation from Ben is, you know, great guidance that he had on the risks tied to moving too fast or too slow when it comes to establishing those internal AI policies, team structures, and thinking about building a team or how to build a team. You heard about his challenges looking for content marketers or thinking about how to hire for content marketers. So definitely some great insights there for any marketer out there looking to develop or build a team. Now, check the show notes. There is a list of the key tools that he mentioned because there's a ton of them. And also there's some ways to connect with Ben. You definitely want to follow him for the content he's sharing. Now, if you're enjoying the content, make sure you're subscribing, make sure you're rating, make sure you're reviewing this podcast wherever you access your favorite podcasts. And as always, if you have a question, you need help with your marketing career, you're not sure what you're doing, maybe you need a little bit of coaching, some guidance on the new job, the next job, or the promotion, or building your team, or even navigating generative AI inside of your team, drop me a note, connect@themarketinghelp.co. Love to connect, love to hear from you. Let's connect. So I'm your host, Eric Harbison, and I will catch you on the next episode.